You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. It seems that Fancy Bear may be interested in Log4Shell after all. CISA issues Emergency Directive 22-02, which addresses Log4j. Huawei's reputation as a security risk may be traceable to a 2012 incident. Tropic Trooper is back and interested in transportation. Meta kicks out 7 cyber mercenary surveillance outfits. Pseudo manuscript looks curiously indiscriminate. Johannes Ulrich from the SANS Technology Institute on making the Great Chinese Firewall work for you. Our guest is Terry Halverson from IBM on next-gen cybersecurity efforts to fix the cybersecurity inequity. And the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom is reportedly hacked. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, December 17th, 2021. One of the mysteries about Log4Shell so far has been the relative absence of Russian exploitation, whether by privateers or intelligence services. To review the bidding, given the extensive activity observed on the part of China, North Korea, Iran, and Turkey, where have the Russian threat actors been? BGR noted that the usual Russian operators seem to have been quiet so far. Mandiant, in its own rundown of cyber espionage taking advantage of Log4j vulnerabilities, sensibly said, quote, "We expect threat actors from additional countries will exploit it shortly if they haven't already. In some cases, state-sponsored threat actors will work from a list of prioritized targets that existed long before this vulnerability was known. In other cases, they may conduct broad exploitation and then conduct further post-exploitation activities of targets as they are tasked to do so." End quote. There are signs now that Fancy Bear, Russia's GRU, has been actively exploiting Log4j vulnerabilities. Security Scorecard just this morning reported that it's observed Drovarub activity, and use of the Drovarub toolkit points to Fancy Bear, APT-28, Russia's GRU military intelligence service. Drovarub, which means woodcutter, is a toolkit developed by the GRU's 85th Main Special Services Center for use against Linux systems. Drovarub has been described as a kind of attacker's Swiss Army knife with multiple uses, and that activity has been extensive. Security Scorecard regards Russian reconnaissance, probing, and probable exploitation as comparable in scale to what's been observed from China. More developments can be expected, the researchers write. Quote, "It's important to remember that we are still in the very early days of trying to understand the security issue and how it's being used by threat actors." End quote. There may be reason to think that self-propagating worms are under development to take advantage of Log4j bugs. Researcher Greg Linares believes at least three groups are working on a log4j worm. Security Week, which cites Linares, also quotes other researchers who think the news of a coming worm is unproven at least, unlikely at best, or probably likely to lead to worms less serious than some of the high-profile cases observed earlier this century. Log4j is from Apache's open-source library, and some have asked if the vulnerability exposed as log4shell should call into question the very idea of using open-source software. The short answer would be, according to some, not at all. IT World Canada has a useful discussion of the issue, in which they point out that the Open Source Security Foundation is well-funded, backed by deep-pocketed tech firms, and that securing open-source software is not a hobbyist's labor of love. MIT Technology Review takes a contrary view, arguing that the security of open-source software is indeed overlooked and underfunded. Their article quotes Veracode's CTO, Chris Weisepal, who says, quote, "The open source ecosystem is up there in importance to critical infrastructure with Linux, Windows, and the fundamental internet protocols. These are the top systemic risks to the internet." End quote. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency this morning issued Emergency Directive 22-02, directing the U.S. federal agencies that fall within its remit to identify and update all vulnerable systems no later than 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on December 23rd. CISA gives the agencies until December 28th to report completion. A coda to the required actions suggests the complex challenge of addressing complex environments. Quote, "These required actions apply to agency applications in any information system, including an information system used or operated by another entity on behalf of an agency, that collects, processes, stores, transmits, disseminates, or otherwise maintains agency information, i.e., all applications in agency ATO boundaries. For federal information systems hosted in third-party environments, such as cloud, each agency is responsible for maintaining an inventory of its information systems hosted in those environments, FedRAMP authorized or otherwise, conducting all necessary reporting to CISA accounting for such systems, and working with service providers directly for status updates pertaining to and to ensure compliance with this directive." End quote. Vendors are working to patch their products against log4shell, and it's proving to involve the struggle most observers have foreseen, Reuters reports. As the patches are issued, they should, of course, be applied when practical, and if you're a Fed, applied by Christmas Eve, lest ye face the wrath of Director Easterly, which would be like a visit from the ghost of Christmas yet to come. The CyberWire's continuing coverage of log4shell can be found on our website. Bloomberg reports that U.S. reservations about Huawei as a security threat have been confirmed by revelation of a 2012 incident in which Australian security authorities traced a malware infestation to a malicious Huawei update. Bloomberg writes, quote, "The incident substantiated suspicions in both countries that China used Huawei equipment as a conduit for espionage, and it has remained a core part of a case they've built against the Chinese company, even as the breach's existence has never been made public," the former officials said. End quote. Australian security services determined that a Huawei software update installed on the network of a major Australian telecommunications company contained malicious code that recorded data transiting the network and sent its take back to China. The malware was self-limiting, apparently in hope of evading detection. It deleted itself after several days of persistence in the network. The Australians shared their discovery with their American counterparts, who then detected a similar attempt against a U.S. network. The incidents had not been formally disclosed, but they provide a clear motivation for the strong suspicion of Huawei that's marked both U.S. and Australian policy over the past decade, especially with respect to allowing that company a place in 5G infrastructure. Tropic Trooper is back, and as security firms Trend Micro and Kaspersky write, the threat group has a new name and a new target set. It's now also being called Earth Centaur, and it's resurfaced to go after targets in the transportation sector. MITRE assesses Tropic Trooper as an unaffiliated threat group, that is probably a hired gun, but notes that its favorite targets have been in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and the Philippines. It's been associated with Pirate Panda, which suggests that its customers are probably in Beijing. Facebook parent Meta has banned 6 commercial surveillance firms and 1 unidentified entity, all of whom it characterizes as cyber mercenaries, from its platforms. The companies affected include Cobwebs Technologies, Black Cube, Cognite, and Blue Hawk CI, all based in Israel, India's Beltrox, Cytrox of North Macedonia, and 1 unidentified entity operating from China. Up to 50,000 users may have been affected by the banned company's products. The University of Toronto's Citizen Lab has called out Cytrox and its Predator tool as worthy of special attention. Predator was installed, they find, on the phones of at least 2 Egyptian dissidents. Kaspersky has identified a mass spyware campaign they're calling Pseudo-Manuscript because of the features it shares with the Lazarus Group's Manuscript malware. But attribution is unclear. Pseudo-Manuscript is indiscriminate in un-Lazarus-like ways, and it's been seen to use a data exfiltration mechanism hitherto associated with China's APT-41, known both for cyber espionage and a financially motivated APT side hustle. It's also been distributed in some cases by the Gloobtiba botnet, a Russian tool. About 35,000 systems have been attacked, with most targets being either governments or industrial control systems. Security firm Avast reports finding a targeted attack by an unknown threat actor using a backdoor in what the security firm identifies only as a small, lesser-known U.S. federal government commission associated with international rights. Ars Technica says the victim is the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. The commission hasn't, Avast says, responded to its disclosures or attempts to engage it, and so little is known about how effective the attack was. But the researchers think it's reasonable to conclude that the attackers were able to intercept and possibly exfiltrate all local network traffic in the organization. It looks like an espionage operation. An intelligence service might find the commission interesting in its own right if that service should be serving a regime that regarded religious freedom as a burr under its saddle. But compromising a small commission might be useful for other reasons. Connections to non-governmental organizations, the possibility of being able to pivot from the commission to other more inherently interesting or U.S.-allied agencies, and so on. And finally, operators of industrial control systems get an early stocking stuffer from the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. CISA yesterday released 27 more industrial control system security advisories, which is, seriously, useful and a lot better than a lump of coal. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. There is a continuing push at the federal level to bring government agencies up to speed with their cybersecurity and rare bipartisan agreement that it is indeed a national priority. One of the issues to overcome is inequity between government agencies, leveling the playing field government-wide. Terry Halverson is general manager of IBM Federal and previously was chief information officer for the U.S. Department of Defense.
I think you will find some organizations in the federal government that are very advanced in their cybersecurity practices and some that are still working their way to get up to the standard that they want to.
And so how do we go about getting them all up to the level where they need to be? What needs to be done here?
I don't know that I know everything that needs to be done, but I would make a couple suggestions, and I think some of these suggestions apply as well to the commercial sector. I think one of the first ones is you have to take a look at the size of your agency or your organization and determine, am I large enough and can I afford on my own to say, do all of the things that you have to do to have a very good cybersecurity program? And I think one of the things that maybe the government might want to look at, and I think commercial agencies might want to also look at that, is sharing some of those responsibilities. I also think that becomes a much more efficient way of doing business. You know, everybody trying to do every part of cybersecurity might not be the best way to do that. This would allow agencies, if they shared, to maybe, you know, form a what I'll call a cybersecurity coalition, share the expense, and probably be able to do a better overall job of executing on their cybersecurity mission. The other thing I'll add is I also think there is a role for industry to play here. I'm very excited about the current administration really calling for industry to play a bigger role. Got CISA really working to reach out to industry to help solve the problems. Because I think if we're going to really get a nation cybersecurity position and really improve that, that it will take cooperation between the government and industry so that we have both a secure government and a secure commercial sector.
Let's dig into that some. I mean, can you give us your insights on some of the things that we've seen coming out of the White House when it comes to cybersecurity?
Well, I think the first thing that most people look at is the executive order. You've got, you know, coming from the White House, coming from the president, an executive order that says we're going to do some things, we're going to measure them within cybersecurity. And I think that's very good. Some of the things apply just to the government, but some areas, you know, like supply chain, apply more broadly to both the commercial and the government sector. And I think that's a great start. And I think this administration will look at it as a start and we'll see some continued emphasis in some new areas where it will apply both to the commercial and the government sector.
Are you optimistic that we're on the right path here, that we're up to this task to be able to take on these challenges?
I'm optimistic that we're up to the task. I think we still have more work to do. Like I said, when we started this, I'm very happy that we've got, you know, an administration up to the president's level that seems to be very interested in making cybersecurity a top priority. From what I have seen, this is an area where they're in one of the few where we have really good bipartisan support in Congress to make cybersecurity better. And I think within the last couple years, what we have seen is both industry and government recognizing that, yeah, we're going to have to work together to solve this. So I think the environment has come together, and I think we have the right timing and the right capabilities to make it work. And we'll have to see if we'll follow through on all that.
That's Terry Halverson from IBM Federal.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance, for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
I'm pleased to be joined once again by Johannes Ulrich. He is the Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute and also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, it's always great to have you back. I know there's some research that you are working on. You've been kind of poking around the edges of the infamous Great Chinese Firewall to see if you can maybe leverage some of its capabilities there. What have you been up to lately?
Yeah, so one thing I observed from my home systems. I'm still one of the few people who runs their own mail servers because I don't trust the cloud. And I do see a lot of inbound spam connections from China. I don't normally email from China. I don't like these geo-blocks because they're hard to maintain. So I figured, hey, well, let's make the Chinese Great Firewall work for me here. And I added some keywords to my mail server's banner that are commonly blocked by the Great Chinese Firewall.
And what happened?
Well, the sad part is not much. My view of the firewall was definitely a little bit too simplistic here. And over the 2 weeks, I did 2 weeks without the keywords, 2 weeks with the keywords, I didn't really see a significant change in the traffic. I still saw the same number of connections, the same number of IP addresses. So it didn't even, like, one thing I was kind of hoping for, that maybe some of those IP addresses that scanned me would get blocked by the Great Chinese Firewall, or maybe my home IP would get blocked, but neither has happened yet.
And why do you suppose that is? I mean, are the spammers coming out of China using their own workarounds to get around the firewall?
That could be one option. I'm also thinking that maybe the firewall is a little bit more specific, that it doesn't look at these banners, which are usually not used to convey content to an end user, but maybe they're more looking at the email itself. So that's one possible option here. I may have picked the wrong keywords, but I picked keywords that are commonly associated with the firewall. So there are some, you know, more or less accurate published lists of these keywords, and I put a bunch of them in, so I probably hit a couple that should be blocked. But that's something I'm still working on, so there's still a little bit of research in progress here.
All right, well, looking forward to checking in with you as you continue that research. Johannes Ulrich, thanks for joining us. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Be sure to check out this weekend's Research Saturday and my conversation with Sagi Sadiq and Nir Ofeld from Wiz. We're discussing their recent Black Hat Europe talk about the need for a cloud vulnerability database. That's Research Saturday. Check it out. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karp, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabi, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.